I have a question for you, and I hope you'll give me an honest answer. In other words, tell the truth. Are you ready? How many of you spent at least part of your Saturday watching football? Show of hands. Okay. And how many of you that may not have watched are aware that football season is here? Okay. Yes, football season is here. Oh, the joy of it. Crisp fall days, brand new uniforms. Yesterday morning, when the day started, everybody was undefeated and anticipating a great season with amazing possibilities. Now, football season in our house meant a lot of things for a lot of years. Excitement, dread, hope, despair. It was a season of extremes. If you win, you feel on top of the world, like you could do anything, like everything is right. Everybody's happy to see you. Everybody wants to talk to you. The crowds cheer. The phone rings. The paper says you're smart and tough and amazing and maybe even unbeatable. But if you lose, it feels like the whole world is against you. And actually, when you lose, a lot of the world is against you. Nobody wants to talk to you. Even family doesn't call to check on you. If the phone rings, it's probably an angry fan. The crowds boo and shout out their rage and disappointment. And the paper says you're an idiot. Ill-prepared. You might not win a game all season. Football is a game where there are winners and there are losers. No in between. There are no points for almost. There's no credit for effort. At the highest levels of football, where the stakes are the highest, one loss, one mistake can mean you're benched, you're cut from the team, or you lost your job if you're a coach. The fact that a loss teaches us lessons or builds character gets you nowhere in football. Maybe that's why it's so attractive to so many. There's no room for ambiguity. There's no messy mercy. Winning is the key to happiness and success. And losers, well, they get what they deserve. We know who our enemies are. We know who's on our team. There's a lot of clarity in such a winner-take-all world. There's something strangely comforting in that clarity. And it keeps people hungry for more. Hungry for more winning. Our faith, however, calls us into a much messier place. A much messier place. And we're called into that messy place in the midst of all the winning the world tells us that we need to do to be worthwhile people. Now, last week, we talked about the rock, Peter, the flawed human being on which Jesus built his church, a man who knew he needed saving and knew Jesus was the one who could do it, and a man who struggled to find the moral courage to follow Jesus to Jerusalem. Peter was a rock and a stumbling block. Peter was an ally and a betrayer. And in the wisdom of the lectionary, we go from Peter now to Paul this week. If Peter was the rock, Paul was the glue. Peter gave the church a founding rock on his strong profession of who Jesus is. You are the Messiah. But Paul stitched together the church with his passionate confession. I was wrong. And you've got to meet this Jesus who changed my life. The church is built on flawed human beings, yes. And the church is held together by our failures and by our willingness to tell the stories of how Jesus heals our wounds. Jesus changed Paul's life. Paul stopped throwing stones and started telling the truth about himself and his need for God's love. God calls on one unlikely messenger after another to cultivate the integrity of our faith. Paul was described in the apocryphal Acts as a small, bald-headed man with crooked legs, but a healthy body, a long nose, and eyebrows that met. He was a strict Pharisee before his conversion. He studied with a renowned rabbi to learn about Torah. Despite his teacher's generosity towards the burgeoning Jesus movement, Saul, not yet Paul, had little patience for the early Christian communities emerging around him. In fact, he became an aggressive, even violent opponent of them. After Paul's dramatic conversion moment on the Damascus Road, a bright light, a blind but now he sees kind of moment carried by the kindness of strangers, he becomes the opposition to those with whom he used to ally himself with. Paul lost his community, his identity, his way of understanding the world, all to follow Jesus. But this dramatic reversal, this profound set of losses, did not leave Paul with a chip on his shoulder, even if he retained but redirected his zeal. Paul's letter to the Roman church is not about girding for battle. It's about believing in the power of God's grace to change everything, even the way we actually feel about things and feel about others. The most important word in this passage for the Roman church is not enemy or vengeance or hospitality or maybe not even love. The most important word in this passage may just be genuine. Paul is talking about a change in our hearts, in the way we actually feel about others, not just in our actions. You see, Christian values, the Christian life, calls us to engage in the struggle of letting our love be genuine, not writing people off because of a disagreement or discord, but seeking in all circumstances to embody the love of Jesus Christ in our honesty, in our vulnerability, in our openness to the other. Genuine love has high expectations. It is not a martyr complex, but it's a powerful surrender to the belief that God's grace can change us from the inside out. Now, Paul had been a person who thrived on winners and losers, but Jesus transformed him into a person who could see he was always both. Following Jesus is about losing and gaining everything at the same time. And Paul is clear. Staying engaged with those with whom we disagree, even with those who persecute us, is what Christ calls us to do in our lives together. This week has been a week full of engagement and conversation with so many of you. That engagement has been a welcome change for me. From the weightiness of what I have carried, and the session has helped to carry the last several months. Just since Monday, I've had the honor of talking face-to-face by phone or email or text with so many of you. I lost count a few days ago, around 50. Your engagement has been a blessing beyond measure. How to be a healthy community when there are barriers to honest conversation is what God calls us to do together. And we all must work hard to invite conversation, to seek constructive engagement. And that is what your elected leaders have been doing now, because they value a community defined by genuine love. There are things about our church culture here that are very, very healthy, unbelievably healthy in the landscape of Christianity in this country. And there are things about our church culture that have diminished our health. My sharing a problem with you last week is an effort to invite all of you more substantively into the work of making us healthier. This place is strong enough to be a diverse community in every sense of that word. But even a healthy place like Grace Covenant is diminished when we don't have high expectations that a genuine love define us. Feigned love, feigned respect is not good enough. For love to be genuine, we must be able to trust that it is extended to every single person here, by every single person here. That is why we're here, in this messy, merciful space, because of high expectations for what God can do. Staying engaged means we expect a lot from each other. Engagement with genuine love is not a one-way street. It's a possibility that flourishes when we acknowledge how much we depend on each other, how much we need each other to be honest, to grow, to be transformed by Christ's love. You and I need to have high expectations for each other and for our community. For this community to be a place that truly professes that God's grace can change everything. And so we hold space for that transformation, even when we can't see it. That's our most important job as a church in this divided and hostile world. And so why is it so easy for Christianity to lose its way from this generous, grace-generated space and become about winners and losers? Maybe because we like things that way. Black and white, no ambiguity. Many of you may be aware of the Nashville statement that came out this week, issued by a group of Christian pastors and teachers. You can go online and see the list of who signed it. This Nashville statement surfaces once again how easy it is for Christianity to become distorted as something about winners and losers. Some Christians came together to say that those who believe LGBTQ people are Christians are not real Christians. The Nashville Statement attempts to write Christians like all of us out of the faith. How is it that we let our love be genuine in the midst of such painful line drawing? How do we love one another with mutual affection, outdo one another in showing honor when mutuality is not present? How do we hold space in such a rejection for how God can work wonders when we stay engaged with our enemies? Casting people out can feel easier than dealing with the discomfort of our failure to be who Christ has empowered us to be. But Paul, the little bald guy with one eyebrow, he's shouting and waving at us to see, to hear, to believe the good news. Jesus isn't afraid of our messes. In fact, it's in our messes where he really shines. Jesus needs us to be honest about our flaws, about our failures. And Jesus needs us to let go of our impulse to think we're the ones who are going to fix it. Such messiness makes space for God's mercy and mystery to heal us. The demand on us is this: truth. Especially the truths that are hard to admit and hard to see. Now, another sports season is underway this fall. Many of you may not be aware of that. Cross country. It doesn't draw the crowds that football does. Any cross country runner will tell you there's no way around it. Cross country hurts. Distance running is not easy. But the great thing about cross country is that the pain comes with a possibility. The possibility of vitality and health that feels so good when you get there. But it depends on our willingness to believe that such vitality and health is worth the effort. In cross country, there are many ways to win. You don't have to come in first. You can better your time. You can help your team with your place in the race. You can walk less. You can feel stronger. You can work up a hill harder than you did last time. You can push a teammate. You can work through the voices that tell you to give up. You can finish the race. The only way to lose in cross country is to quit. To reject the belief that the hard work and the pain are worth it. Following Jesus uses those muscles, the you can keep going when it's hard muscles. And this table that we gather around today is where we're fed and our thirst is quenched so we can keep running this race together. I can just hear Paul coaching us. Keep working. Come on, Grace Covenant, you can do it. Do not lag in zeal. Be ardent in spirit and serve the Lord. Thanks be to God.